Hello, hello. So today we have another conversation for you. This time it's with Daniel Glide. I met Daniel a few years ago on a free trip through work, and Daniel was the partner of another lady that had won the trip as well. So I got to know him a little bit in Portugal a few years ago, but more recently, more so over Facebook, we have a few common interests. Daniel worked for the BBC as a sports broadcaster for 20 years. And it was, you know, the kudos of the job. He loved the job. He's a big sports fanatic. But for the last few years, just realised how unhappy, stressed, burnt out he was. Wasn't living healthily at all. And then, like a lot of us, in 2020, the pandemic hit and he ended up going for voluntary redundancy, which shocked his partner, I think, at the time. And and has basically since been building his own coaching company, and it's called Positive Masculinity, and he focuses on men who are suffering burnout, stress and anxiety and living without purpose, and they want to be their best selves. So listen to Daniel's story of where he came from and what he's now doing in terms of having a huge impact for men all over the world. Enjoy. Well, hello, lovely listeners. Today I have the honour of speaking with Daniel Glide. I met Daniel back in, 2018? I think it was. Yeah, 2018. And never thought I'd get him on a podcast a few years later. But basically, I worked for a company called Iris back then, and I qualified for an incentive, which was a free trip to Portugal. And Daniel was the lovely husband, partner of another lady at Iris that qualified, Julie. And we got chatting out there and had a few laughs and a few drinks and all of that. And then more recently, because we were connected on Facebook, started to see that Daniel is living off grid now and he's changed in terms of what he's doing. And we connected a few weeks back, and I got to understand that Daniel is now a coach, and which is obviously what I am as well. So I thought it'd be amazing to have Daniel on because he had a very different career before this, and very prestigious career as well, or perceived prestigious, try and say that. So, over to you, Daniel. Welcome. It's brilliant to have you on.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for having me on. I'm delighted to be here. So 2018, that was quite a year for me when we first met. So that holiday, which was lovely, that resort was just tremendous, wasn't it? And it was free. So, really lovely. It was on the Algarve, wasn't it? Yeah. I think that was about the sixth holiday I'd been on that year. It was the year of many holidays. And what that did for me was gave me a lot of kind of time and space to look at my life. So if I remember rightly back then, I was probably a couple of stone overweight. If I remember rightly, we both drank pretty heavily on that holiday.
Rude.
And that was something I did quite regularly. And it was a way of escaping, avoiding the way I was truly feeling. Now, what I did realize steadily over time that year was that I was living the completely wrong life. Now, what I mean by wrong is a life that wasn't aligned to who I really was. So that year kind of kicked off a journey where I started to examine that, who I really was, what I really wanted. What I did before when I met you was I was a sports broadcaster. I worked for the BBC. I'd worked there for nearly 20 years. And I absolutely loved that job. It was fantastic. You know, I'm very passionate about sport. So what better place could I be if I wasn't a sportsman, which I was never good enough to be? Then the only way I was ever going to be mixing with athletes and sports people and going to the great events was to be covering them in some way. So, yeah, it was a marvelous job. I got to go to some fantastic sporting events, ticked them all off my list, the Open Golf, Wimbledon, where I worked on Premier League football matches. Met some fantastic people. It was great. And I felt privileged really to do it. And I think that was the problem really, because that feeling privileged would meant that I did things that weren't good for my well-being. I worked very unsociable hours. I worked long hours. I'd sometimes work weeks on end. You know, if you worked on a big event, you'd work on weeks on end without a day off, without any rest. And I wasn't very good in my downtime switching off and resting. I was still across all my work emails, and it was very stressful, very, very anxious. And I think what I realized, and probably it was 2018, was that I've been suffering with a chronic anxiety disorder probably for about a decade. That sometimes tipped over into depression. There were times where I just didn't want to get out of bed. And bearing in mind, I did this job that I absolutely loved. Mm. That was bizarre. But so what I did was took drugs and drank and ate too much and, you know, everything to escape and avoid that feeling. You know, I was struggling to sleep sometimes. So I just went to the doctors, got sleeping pills. Never really took the time to examine what was going on. But so it started to dawn on me that something was clearly wrong in my life. And I think that summer I met you, I read the book The Secret. And it's kind of basic, that book, but, you know, it's about the law of attraction. But what that made me realize was there was a different way of looking at your life and a different way of getting what you wanted. I'd always been about the hustle and, you know, working really hard and going out and making things happen about my external life. I think what that signaled to me, The Secret, was that the important thing is your internal life. And that's where the magic is. So I guess I sort of reconnected with my soul, if you like, if that's not too highfalutin phrase or a bit woo-woo. But yeah, that's what it felt like. And when I did that, I started to do things like mindfulness practices. I started to do breath work, cold water therapy. And that just slowed all my thinking right down. I used to think at 100 mile an hour, Mel. My mind was constantly on the go. It never, ever switched off. So every thought that came in, I kind of interacted with. And, you know, I didn't realize that I had the power to choose my thoughts. And that given the time and space, thought you can just let thoughts come and go. Also, due to being a man and never having been given the tools to understand my feelings and emotions, I buried them and pushed them away unless I liked them. And I went for short-term pleasures all the time to try and again avoid what my feelings were really telling me. And what my feelings were telling me is I needed to put my self-care first. That needed to be my number one priority. Now, I'd always thought that was selfish. But what I realized is to be the best version of myself and therefore be the best husband, be the best father, be the best son, you know, all the various roles you play, the important thing to do was care for myself first. That then I could pour from a full cup instead of the sort of half empty cup I was trying to pour from all the time. So yeah, gradually I realized the career wasn't for me. And the bizarre thing was the minute I let go of caring about that, all the opportunities I've been striving for the last 5 years poured in. Now that told me something. That told me something again about my internal state, my mindset, that I'd been attaching to outcomes too much and I'd been pushing things away from me by chasing after them. Now, don't get me wrong, these opportunities didn't come out of nowhere. I'd worked very hard, you know, I'd got the right experience, but I'd used to tell myself a story about why I wasn't getting them. And it was just a story I was making up in my head. It wasn't true. And it was pushing this stuff away from me. So I think The Secret made me realize, you know, how you get what you want and how you manifest your desires. So, yes, so I probably stayed on at the BBC longer than I would have done because I got promoted twice and I got to direct network programs and all sorts of lovely stuff. But I got to a point where eventually, you talked about my wife earlier, Julie, I sent her an email one day and I just went, right, that's it, I'm done, I'm leaving. She was absolutely gobsmacked.
And she really, I said, right, did she really not think?
Yeah, she did not see it coming at all. Because wow. I loved that job, Mel. I loved it. And you can imagine what it was like telling other fellas that I'd worked in sports broadcasting. Yeah. They were amazed and thought it was brilliant. And how good was that for my ego? Mm. Like my ego used to love that. I used to love it. And it was so wrapped up with my identity. Yeah. So she didn't see it coming at all. She knew I wanted to make change and she knew I was gone down a path of personal development and growth. And she kind of joined me on that path. But yeah, that came out of nowhere. Then lockdown happened. So the pandemic came along. That then, you know, all the sports stopped. So I had 3 months where I did very little and got paid. So I had lots of time. It was very quiet and peaceful time. And again, that's when I really started to do some work on who I was and what I wanted from my life. So I got coaching as well. I got a couple of online coaches who really helped me decide what my values and my priorities were and what I wanted out of life. We looked at every area of my life and where I wanted to be and who I wanted to be. And then gradually over that first year of lockdown, I started to realize that that's what I wanted to do. What those coaches had helped me to do was to help others go on that journey, because I figured, you know, it made me a better person. I made the world a better place by changing who I was internally, getting rid of all those limiting beliefs, all those things that held me back. And I'd played small, even though, you know, I'd done pretty well in my career and, you know, worked with some amazing people. I played small the whole time, though. I was full of fear and anxiety, and that held me back. And so I went through the coaching, got unshakable self-belief, and realized actually that what I wanted was I wanted the time and the space to make conscious choices. I wanted freedom. I wanted fun. I wanted to love and to serve. And I wanted to live a life that was sustainable and where I was self-sufficient. So I wasn't relying on anybody else. So I wanted to be my own boss. And then literally as I'd made that decision, as the universe does, it said, well, here you go then. Here's voluntary redundancy at the BBC. They had to make cuts because of COVID. So that meant I had a bit of money as well. So jumped at that chance. I had a massive wobble actually at that time, because as I said, you know, my identity was so wrapped up in that job, in working for the BBC, which I loved, being part of that organisation, and doing sport, which I loved. So I had a massive wobble when I did it. I took it and I got a bit of coaching and some counselling at the time, which helped me through that. And it was the best thing I ever did. Amazing decision. I felt when I finally got to grips with it, I felt free. I felt lighter. So I used that money, invested in myself, invested in my own personal growth, learned neuro-linguistic programming. That's easy for me to say. Did a couple of coaching courses. And then decided to set myself up as a coach. At the same time, we started searching for houses with a bit of land where we could start growing our own fruit and veg, where we could live a bit more sustainably and self-sufficiently. And then graduated. So what I did, I left the BBC, I carried on working in broadcast, and I still do bits and bobs as a freelance contractor. So that was still my main form of income, and I sort of transitioned into the world of coaching.
How long did it take? Sorry to interrupt you, but in terms of, you said you were so wrapped up in the identity and it took some time for you to be okay with all of that. And you obviously had coaching and counselling. Do you know how long it took you to get to a place of acceptance and more contentment with that?
So, yeah, it was about 6 weeks, 2 months. Like I said,
not massive. Long,
no, not too long. No, because again, when you get a coach, as you all know, Mel, you can speed up these processes of, you know, when you've got somebody there to hold the mirror up to you, to pick you up on your BS stories and all the rubbish that you tell yourself, you can make progress really quickly. So, I processed that stuff really quickly. And I mean, probably within a couple of coaching sessions, and I had a really good counselor too, I started to feel lighter and freer straight away, and I could feel, but my mind kept kicking in because, you know, your mind likes familiar, doesn't it? Even if familiar isn't good for you, It likes it. So, you know, the mind kept saying, what the hell are you doing? You know, you've worked 20 years for this career. This is always all you've ever wanted. This is what you know, you're going to have to go back to starting at the bottom and, you know, put all that work in again. So my mind was telling me all this stuff. But when you've got a coach, they can hold that mirror up for you and show you that, and show you that it's rubbish, and show you that it's limiting you, and show you that you can choose another way of thinking, that you don't, you know, you have choices. And so I'd already kind of, because I'd done so much work on myself, I'd got to a place where I did have that space. So, you know, I was doing mindfulness practice and meditation. I find particularly good for helping with that sort of thing, because you can just sit with yourself and be quiet and just be with how you feel and be with what comes and not judge it and not push it away and bury it and escape and avoid, which is always what I'd always done with anything that made me feel bad in the past. So, yeah, I think I processed that fairly quickly. And then so when I'm becoming a freelance contractor, that gave me control then. So I could decide when I worked. So when I first did that, I made the mistake of saying yes to everything and worked way too much. But I've realized very quickly that actually saying no is quite a powerful thing, and it didn't mean people weren't going to come back and offer me work. The opposite, in fact, when you say no, in fact, they think you're therefore a more wanted person.
So, yeah, in demand.
Yeah, your value goes up. Like, I did that, and I found that so much more enjoyable, being able to pick and choose when I worked, do the things I wanted to do. The minute I walked out the door, that was job done. So I didn't have all the bureaucracy, all the rubbish that comes with being a member of staff, particularly at an organisation like the BBC. But that's not for now. All that
stuff. Oh, I'm dying to know.
Yeah, I mean, the layers and layers of crap in that place. But yeah, so I didn't have that anymore, and I could work for other broadcasters. So I worked for Channel 4 and IMG and Sky and other places. So that was good as well, because I'd never really done that before in my career too much. And also it meant I had the time then and a bit of money, as I said, to keep working on my own development and my own growth. And the more I did that, the more tools I had, the more techniques I had to bring to my coaching practice. So gradually I started to put myself out there as a coach. I then had to do one more course to help me learn how to build a business and do that, because I've been an employee all my life. I had no idea how to market myself. I had no idea about, you know, being self-employed and what all that meant. So I needed a lot of help with that. And what I realized on that last course was I had a lot of issues around money, a lot of issues. So they really helped me work through all that stuff. Lots of thoughts of lack and why would anybody ever pay me for my help and my advice and things like that, which is how I felt at first. So I worked through all that stuff. And now, yeah, I'm up and running. I've got a relatively thriving business at the moment. I always want things to be better. I'd always like more clients. I'd always want to help and serve more people. But it just, my life now, I talk to a lot of my clients, I deal with their work-life balance, and work-life balance just isn't an issue for me now, Mel, because my work and life are the same thing. Mm. Because I'm in total charge of it all. I can work when I want, wherever I want, from wherever I want. It's flexible. So, no, you know, to an extent, I have to be there when my clients need me. But, you know, when you've only got a few clients, that's not the face-to-face stuff's not a great deal of time. So I'd no longer exchange my time for money. And that gives me that freedom that I craved, that I could never have in as a broadcaster. Even as a freelancer, I get a bit more freedom, but you're still exchanging your time for money. You're still doing 10-hour shifts. You're still traveling long journeys. I worked on the Rugby League World Cup, which was fantastic, but boy, was it time heavy, really hard work, really long days. Working on that event made me realize, yeah, this, I've absolutely made the right call here. I love coaching, and it doesn't feel like work, Mel. It doesn't. I love it so much, and it's amazing that people will pay you good money to do something you really love, because I think, again, that was a limiting belief I used to have, that wasn't the case.
Okay, cool. So in terms of because I know this, when you start to decide that you want to be a coach, then you're trying to figure out who you want to help, and you're trying to, there's lots of challenges you go through, imposter syndrome, as you've already mentioned, why is anybody going to listen to me and all of that sort of thing. And then it's like, who do you serve? Who's going to resonate with you? And it's so difficult in the early days to figure all that out, but it comes eventually. So in terms of your target market, who is it that you're serving, and how did you get to that place of realizing that?
So basically I'm still working that out, Mel, to be honest. I helped me a few years ago. Yeah. So kind of professional men who've reached midlife and gone, is this it? They've got everything the culture tells them is success, you know, good job, plenty of money in their pocket, nice house, marriage, kids, you know, nice car, all the stuff that our culture tells us is success. And you kind of get there and you think, is this it?
Mm.
And yeah, people are men who have kind of got to that point, and they're searching for meaning, they're searching for purpose. They want better work-life balance. They realise the damage that stress and anxiety is doing to them. They want, like me, they want that bit more space, that bit more time. They'd like to be present more with their family and their friends because, you know, as I said to you, even when I wasn't working, I never switched off. And that's, you know, it's very, very common that. So they're the people I work with at the moment, Mel, but I'm still kind of working out. I'd probably quite like to niche down even further, I think. You know, I've only been doing this really professionally for a few months now, full time. Mm. So I think that will adjust further. And, you know, it may be actually that I work with broadcasters because, again, that would make sense. That's who a lot of my friends are. I've got a big network there. I've already got some trust and rapport. And I get it. I totally understand. It's a very unique industry, very insecure industry. And I understand that. And so maybe I'll go down that road. At the moment, I'm just helping professional men in midlife and sort of guiding them through those changes that midlife bring. I think a lot of, you know, there's midlife crisis is a thing, isn't it? I mean, I don't like to use that word, but yeah. You know, and that's not both, you know, obviously both genders get that, but I, being a man, I get the male version of it. I understand that, and I guess that to an extent that's what I went through. I was going through at the time when I first met you.
Did you buy a Harley Davidson?
Say what?
Did you buy?
I didn't do that one. No, what I ended up doing actually, I used to do a lot of ridiculous sporting things. So I used to go and swim across rivers and locks and all sorts. That was my midlife crisis.
Okay.
And actually, that's something I look back on now and I think, boy, have I got some fortitude. I sort of draw on that now and I'm having bad days. I think, come on, mate, you can get for anything. You swam across the Firth of Forth.
Yeah,
so they're the people, that's the people I help currently. And, you know, I have a bit of a philosophy about what I do to help men, because I think because the world has changed so much in the last 20 or 30 years, I think a lot of especially kind of straight white men feel like they're being oppressed now and feel like they're under attack because of, you know, the striving for equality and all these sort of things. They, you know, they have that mindset like I did, like that there's lack. And that if you give somebody else something, it takes away from you. So I like helping guys face that and face the fact that that's not a thing. And also dealing with, this isn't a phrase I like, but it's the only one I know to describe this, but toxic masculinity. So, you know, that thing of that boorish behavior, that, you know, celebrating, over drinking, eating badly, treating other people with disdain, judging people. That controlling and abusive type behavior that comes from that. I like to kind of show that there's another way of being a strong, powerful man, and that actually collaboration and unity in diversity and that sort of thing. I that's my philosophy on how we should be men in the modern world. So that's why I like working with men, because I like helping them work through that stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. and how do you work with them? Is it one-on-one sessions and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so at the moment all my coaching is all online. It's all one-on-one, but I think something I need to do more of, so I'm starting to do sort of workshops and bits and pieces like that. I think I'm going to set up some group coaching, and also I think what men particularly need is support networks. So I want to set up, kind of probably start on social media, but groups where men could just get together and we can share and we can talk. Because again, something I work on with my clients is feelings and emotions, because something I suffered with because of the way our culture is and my upbringing, you know, I was always taught that showing emotion was weakness. Never directly. No, don't get me wrong. Nobody ever said to me, don't show emotion. That's weakness. Just in the way it was demonstrated in my role models and the way probably people would have reacted to me if I got upset as a child, like big boys don't cry, all that sort of thing. So yeah, I like to help men realize that talking and sharing is strength, it's not weakness, that emotions are something that we need to understand, and helping to give men the tools to understand it, because I never had the tools to understand it. Nobody ever taught me as a child or demonstrated to me as a child how to deal with your emotions. So I just repressed them and buried them. And when you do that, that just stores up bad stuff for the future. So yeah, that's something I want to do, is create spaces for men where we can share that stuff and talk about that stuff. And we still be blokey blokes, right? You know, and still talk about football and, you know, and all the stuff that men do. But also, we, you know, I think it's so important for mental health as well. You know, the suicide rates are ridiculously high in men of a certain age. And that is because they don't feel they have anywhere to turn. And they end up telling them all this stuff about themselves in their own heads. And everything always seems so much worse when you don't let it out and you don't have somebody to share it with. And people feel isolated because they don't realize that everybody, we're all going through this stuff. You know, it's a lot of these things are just human problems that we all have. We all have self-esteem issues, we all have self-belief issues, we all have self-worth issues. We live in a very dysfunctional culture, and I think particularly for kind of men in midlife at the moment, there's a lot of messaging out there that's telling them they're wrong and they're bad. And they also get a sense of that as well. I think that's why I drank heavily for so long, because of that toxic masculine thing, which I knew deep in my heart was not the way forward. But I wanted to fit in, I wanted to be like my mates, I wanted to be involved in all the banter and all that stuff. And you know, so I look back now and it makes me wince and makes me cringe, some of the things I would have done and said. But then I've, you know, and I want to help men realize there's a different way, and actually we can still, that thing that a masculine energy brings, that can still be celebrated, that can still be used. You know, we can still be creative and providers, and we can still be strong leaders and powerful. But we do that by having power with people, not power over people. You know, it's just little slight nuanced changes, really. But it's important, I think.
That sounds amazing. And, you know, you're absolutely right. Men are terrible at talking about things, and the friendships, if men do have a friendship group, you know, it's very rare. I think the younger generation, if I think about my son, who's 23, nearly 24.
Yeah, they're much better, aren't they?
They are much better.
Same age, and he's much better. So, you know, he would talk to me about how he felt about something. He would tell me if he felt anxious.
Yeah.
You know, he'd, about something or other. Yeah, it's much better. I mean, I think it's kind of that Gen X and above baby boomer generation where we just, you know, I would have hour-long conversations with old mates I'd not spoke to for years. And Julie would say to me, how are they? How was Jeff? Didn't actually ask him that. And I'd, you know, talk to him for an hour. She said, what you talked about then? Well, you know, football, rugby, politics, work, you name it. Not how we were, not how we felt, none of that.
I know, it's bonkers. But it sounds like you're doing an amazing, you're providing an amazing service and a very much needed service. I mean, especially with what's been going on over the last few years, you know, there's more and more people that are struggling so much as a repercussion of the last 3 years, but also as a repercussion of how, you know, like you said, our generation, people of our age, middle age, they just weren't given the tools, the information growing up, and, you know, social media, TV, all of that sort of stuff doesn't, like you said, the white male, straight male, it has been, what's the word, you know, penalized.
Yeah, we're bombarded with messages telling us how crap we are, Mel.
Yeah.
And I get it, right? I get it. I understand. And I know that things had to change and we couldn't carry on as a culture the way we were. And I think in the last few years, I've really got to understood what privilege means. And, you know, I understand now as a straight white man how privileged I've been. I live in a world made by straight white men for straight white men. But not anymore, I don't. You know, that's changing. But that doesn't mean that I can't still be a straight white man, and that doesn't mean I still don't have something to contribute, and that doesn't mean there aren't positive things about that identity and coming from that place that can be celebrated and can be used in a positive way. But yeah, we are just, you know, bombarded by your shit all the time, and I think, you know, men are finding that difficult to deal with. And it's not, there isn't a positive, I don't think, a positive message about how we can be in the world, how we can make it a better place, how we can undo some of the shocking things that we've done, and you know, all the oppression. And you know, it's not necessarily our responsibility, but we have to take responsibility for it. Otherwise, how's it ever going to change?
Exactly. Okay, cool. So if anybody listening really resonates with what you're doing and would like to reach out and know more, where's the best place for them to find you?
So LinkedIn is definitely the place I'm most active. So you can search me on there, Daniel Glide or Dan Glide Coach. Or if you search positive masculinity, that's my company. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook. But LinkedIn is definitely the place where I, you know, talk about this stuff. And you can, there's links on there to book a call with me, or you can just drop me a message and have a chat. But yeah, that's where to find me, LinkedIn.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll put some links in the show notes anyway, so people can find you there as well. Okay, well, it's been a pleasure having you on, Daniel. And I always like to finish these conversations with any pearls of wisdom you feel called to share.
Oh, God. So I would say my pearl of wisdom for today, slow down. Slow down. Appreciate what's around you. Be grateful for being alive. It's so easy these days. We live in such a fast-paced world. We're bombarded with information. We're told to multitask. Multitasking doesn't work. It's not a thing. Slow down. Be deliberate. Make conscious choices about what you do with your time and your energy and your money. Don't be swayed by what other people think. Don't be swayed by the messages that you're given. Believe in yourself, but slow down and give yourself the time to know who you are and what you're about. And then once you know that, be deliberate in your life. Live by design, not by default. And that's not mine, I nicked it, but I kind of sums it up.
You like that, yeah. Amazing. Yeah, love all of that. Well, thank you again, Daniel. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you. And I know the listeners are going to love this one.
Delighted. I've enjoyed it. Thanks, Mel.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed that conversation or were inspired in any way, please, please leave me a review on iTunes. It's the best way for other people to find my podcast and be inspired themselves.
If you'd like to know more about me and my coaching, you can find me at melclarkcoaching.com, Clark with an E on the end, or email me at mel@melclarkcoaching.com.